Dior had a big article on the plans for Machne Yehuda. If they work that out, like a little bus going around taking people to all the shops, totally covered area. It sounds like Yemot HaMashiach with those plans. But okay, we'll see what happens. Can you hear me over there? He's in orbit. What's going on there? Now we have another half minute, and we can roll. A lot is happening here, but we have to learn Torah. That keeps the world going. If you studied the Nefesh HaChaim of Rav Chaim Volozhin, that's the secret of our existence. In Volozhin, there was never a minute when they were, they studied all night. They had, people took ships from, I have all the information exactly, but let's say from 7 o'clock to 12 midnight, for 12 midnight to 5 a.m., people took ships, volunteers. There was never a minute when there wasn't Torah being studied. And after Yom Kippur, the Netzivs used to learn in the Beis Medrash till the first students came back, they broke the fast, and then he went and broke the fast. But there was, even after Yom Kippur, there was study. Okay, today is Sunday, December 4th, 2016, and here we are in the middle of, actually at the start of a very fascinating tshuva, dealing with Russian Jewry, the reawakening. Should we go out, encourage them, work with them, risk our lives to deal with communist Russia? This tshuva is written in 1985. I can tell you 1985 was one of the worst years in modern times after the Stalin period as far as dealing with communist Russia and the Jewish problem. I would call it the storm before the lull. That's what it amounted to. No one could dream that Chernobyl was going to happen, that the communist empire would fall. And in 85, they were arresting people on the street for being involved in Zionist Jewish activities. And my instructions, unlike 81, when we were allowed to use public phones and the Mossad gave me permission to talk to a postgraduate student of mine in Miklala, who was a Russian young lady and never knew she was Jewish but knew nothing about Judaism. She had a master's in English, she was a tour guide, and she was working with a group that came from Canada, professors visiting Russia. And one of the professors was Jewish. This is a true story. She should live and be well. One of the professors was Jewish. And he said to her, Helena Fuchs, could you show us the synagogue? And for the first time in her life, she walked into the synagogue on Akhapova Street, the Choral Synagogue, the only functioning synagogue in Moscow. And something happened to her in the synagogue. She was just overwhelmed. And she returned to her people, B'lei V'Nefesh. So Helena came in Aliyah and didn't know anyone here, had no relatives here. Just had one name. There's a Yitzchak Meir Kahana in Matistov. And not to be confused with the famous Meir Kahana. And Yitzchak Meir Kahana, did you ever hear this name, Yomon? Yitzchak Meir Kahana. Do you recognize the name?
Rebbe mentioned it a few times before.
Okay, a book was published about him. I knew him, I met him. So she was told, you find him and he'll take care of everything. And that's exactly what happened. She lived in his house. He made a shidduch for her. Brilliant girl, came to Michalá, postgraduate afterwards. And she taught me how to use the telephone. So that when I went to Russia in 1981, January, the boss gave me permission to speak with her. I swore her to secrecy, and she taught me how to use the telephone, the buses, how the systems work, little things like that, because it was very different than what we were used to in the Western world. And in 85, I couldn't use not a private telephone and not a public telephone. Ad kedei kach, they were worried that the KGB was listening. Okay, so this is when the tshuva is written, and as I showed you last week, Reb Menashe Klein has spoken to people coming back, and he believes this is a big miracle happening in Russia, and we have to work with them. And I compared it to Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik in the 70s, when winds first started to blow and brought news to the outside world that there was some sort of reawakening in Russia. The Rav couldn't believe it. He was skeptical. He couldn't believe it. It was difficult for him to comprehend that this was really happening. And I explained to you why Rav Menashe Klein reacted one way and why the Rav reacted another way, because Rav Menashe Klein only knew of the communists from a long distance. But the Rav experienced it, and Khaslovich read his sister's memoir, and he saw the communist power, and he was frightened. How could there be a reawakening? How could Jews wake up? Mori Rebbe felt that it's almost impossible, but if it is true, then it is a great miracle. Okay, now, before I go further, I just want to make some comments on last week's shiur. First of all, I want to dedicate the shiur today in memory of Reb Elimelech Zweibel, Reb Melech, as he was called. He was the Mashgiach in Morristown and the main Chabad yeshiva that gives smicha, and I hear stories about him without end. What a Rebbe, what an individual, what a person, what knowledge. Shas, Paiskim, Kabbalah, Hasidut, and his love for every student. I wish I knew him, and I know some of his Talmidim, and I'm just overwhelmed by all that I'm reading about him. So I'm happy whatever words of Torah I have to say, Yehei Zichro Baruch. Commenting on the baseball and my debate with Alex, and I have to say, Alex, I responded to you last Monday again.
I heard, but
I want to say, I feel very bad. In other words, if what you say is true, I don't know what's going on in YU in America. I left 48 years ago. Even then, I only knew what was going on in my own shiur because I was very busy. I was a rav in New Jersey. So I really can't evaluate. But chas v'chalilah, people, first of all, you don't shtach anyone else's hashkafa. There are reasons why I can't give all the lectures I've given over the years and repeat them again. I understand 100% why Agudat Yisrael thinks the way they think, and why Lakewood thinks the way they think, and why Terev Adas thinks the way they think. All right, we have a different point of view. It doesn't mean we're more right or they're more right. For some, that's good. For some, another point of view is good. No one wins them all. But I want to say, across the world, my point of view played well with people raised in very Hasidic environments. From Cleveland, David Newman, I have heard that when Rav Gifta Shliter would walk past the baseball field and would observe the Bachurim playing ball, he would stop and root for the boys, encouraging them to play their best. And that's Rav Mordechai Gifta. He was a very unique individual. We spoke about him in great detail a number of years ago. From a Talmud of mine from Crown Heights, and a Yid I can tell you about him, a Yid at Tzaddik. So this Talmud writes, I let my kids go to baseball games if they want. I don't actively encourage it, but if they want to go with friends, I don't make an issue out of it. My oldest son grew out of it. My youngest son actively follows sports, and I don't see it affecting his frumkeit or learning. The opposite, if I would make an issue about it, it would probably have the opposite effect. So it's very fascinating, and all I can tell you is in my time, and I write about it, no one has proven me wrong, and it's the first part of Washington that it was asked permission to republish it. People republished it in a sefer with halacha on sports. In my time, Gedolei Yisrael love baseball, and I explain why. And in order to go further, Rabbi Lichtenstein, Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Rav Yehuda Ralitusky, his son-in-law, can give you every score, every batting average out of the 1930s into the 40s. And I can go on and on with the list. All right, many of us outgrew it. I hold that I never want to outgrow it for one simple reason. For me, it is the best medicine in the world. I miss that the games are not in progress now. Every morning I go to the Yankee website, Yomo can testify, and I spend 5 minutes watching the highlights and I'm like a kid again, and I forget all the problems that weigh on our heads. After you heard Rabbi Kenny Brand speak last Thursday, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, we'll have to speak about that in private. I have a lot of concerns.
I already expressed my point of view.
Where did you express your point
of view? To Rabbi Eisenstein. He wanted to hug me and kiss me. All right.
Okay. So, yeah, we should talk about that.
Okay. Now, I also want to mention that this is a very famous, I heard this story many times. There's a fellow here who grew up in the Bronx. He lives in Yerushalayim, quite successful, Yaakov Bauman. So one day he cut shear to play basketball. And after he played basketball, he went to the Schwitz in the Bronx. Who does he meet in the Schwitz? Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich. Bauman, was tut ihr da? What are you doing here? And Bauman says, Rebbe, what are you doing here? They both headed off to Shear and didn't say a word about it afterwards. So there's a little comment from the Bronx, and I've heard that story with Rabbi Yeruchim, character par excellence. What can I tell you? One other word from last week's Shear, very fascinating. If you recall, I showed you pictures of what I saw in Russia. You should get the feel of the old and the new, the Balei Tshuva and the Sarid HaPleita. So I showed you a picture from Minsk. So Nachum Lam, my Talmud, shows me he and his family were touring an exhibition of pictures about the refuseniks. And one of the pictures they saw was this picture, and his mother recognizes her uncle in the picture. And this is Nachum Lam's uncle in Minsk, one of the few people in Minsk who remained from. Okay, and now we're ready to roll. Dr. Joel, welcome to class. Your son brings me great, great nachat. Okay, now I'm going to show you something very fascinating here. And it's going to cost. It can't go for nothing, because then you won't appreciate it. And I decided that Yomo was going to honor me by putting up 36,000 ruble in honor of this source that I will show you in 2 minutes. Yomo agreed?
I don't have any ruble.
I know you don't have ruble now, but it's the IOU list. I'll never collect, but at least in theory, 30, he's from Russia, you understand? That's Sanchez, he's from Barcelona, he just died. I found out he's not even Jewish, his father was Jewish, not his mother. Sachs, the actor from England. Cleese is a funny guy. Okay, don't worry, if you don't know it, it doesn't matter, it's not Shasson Paiskin. Now he asks, this is the heart of his question. Listen to it very carefully. You can see this is a Haredi person asking the question that maybe I have to give up everything else I'm doing and just devote myself to helping the Jews in Russia. Maybe it means I have to work with Russian diplomats. I have to be diplomatic. I have to do what I can to impress upon them, help my brethren, let the Jews be religious, let the Jews go. And of course, this is going to be done with askanim, shomrei Torah mitzvot, va'al pi hora'at gedolei Yisrael ha'amitim. And you see, right away you can tell this is a Haredi person asking the question. And this takes us, obviously, into the whole concept of Das Torah. In modern Hebrew, Da'at Torah. In the Yiddish I was brought up in, Das Torah. Now, I refer you, a gentleman in Gris Kollel many years ago gave 6 months of lectures on Das Torah. That gentleman has in his files letters from people from the Haredi world who said to him these were the greatest lectures they ever heard on Das Torah. So I can't repeat the lectures now. I can only refer you to yutorah.org.
What years ago?
Years ago. It has to be 6, 7, 8 years ago, something like that. You'll pick it up. It's all on there, given in this room, recorded. I was dealing with the fallout after dealing with Zionism. I just explained to my grandson, who's teaching in Shalavim, why Zionism had to come about through Theodor Herzl. I showed my grandson an open Medrash Rabbah, and he was jumping for joy. He couldn't believe what he saw. So, Baruch Hashem, that's on Zionism. After Zionism, I dealt with Satma, I dealt with Aguda, and then I dealt with Das Torah. Now, Das Torah is a term, a concept that never existed in that sense before modern times. The only place we find Das Torah is in the Gemara in Chulin, I believe it's Daf Tzadi Hei, where it deals with what veins. We all know that after Yaakov injured his Gid HaNasheh, you're not allowed to eat the Gid HaNasheh. All right, so the question is, what veins, the right, the left, how much do you have to take out? So the Gemara uses the word, ultimately, Da'at Torah. This is what we do. If I can paraphrase it, it means, like I said about Shlomo Lakarbach, people continue to write to me, some people maledict him, some people praise him, and I'm caught in a quagmire because I'm not happy. But Klal Yisrael sings his songs, I have to sing them too, I can't be different. So you see, Da'at Torah is the way we act, the way we do, and we have to follow what the practice is. However, in modern times, beginning with 1919, when Aguda started functioning, and I think it was an influence of Hasidic Rebbeim, people agreed with me, disagreed with me. You see, in the Hasidic world, a Rebbe's a Rebbe. You don't see the Lubavitcher Rebbe consulting with people outside of Lubavitch. Yes, if you came to the Rebbe with a Shaila, he'd send you to one of the poskim in Chabad. Chabad had Rashi Yeshiva, poskim. Many of them were litvakim, tahorim. I mean, Rav Gustman started in America with a Rashi Yeshiva in Chabad and Tomchei Tamimim. So you had who to ask your questions to. You don't see the Gera Rebbe, particularly the present Gera Rebbe, doesn't consult with others. The Vishnitzer Rebbe, all right, they're two brothers today, both Reb Yisrael, Reb Mendel, each claim they sort of get along, Baruch Hashem, but they're not going to consult with outsiders. It's not like the Rav, when he had the Shaila about taking it's now in Yonadiyoma, Castro just died, taking Jews out of Cuba, on Yom Kippur. So the Rav, who did he consult with? Remember what I told you? No, Reb Aaron Kotler. You understand, the Rav consulted with Reb Aaron Kotler. Believe me, it reveals who the Rav looked up to in learning. It gives you an idea who he considered his equal, who he could talk with freely. If I had difficult shailas years and years ago, I always consulted with Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. You follow? I felt comfortable. Right, today I'm older, I'm a little bit more learned, a little bit more experienced. So generally I know what I paskin, I have confidence in what I'm saying. But still, a shaila like the Rav got with taking being Mechalel Yom Kippur, he consulted the Reb Aaron Kotler. So I make the claim that Das Torah, to a certain degree, was influenced by the Hasidic concept, except that the way Agudat Yisrael established it, it wasn't an individual. It was a Mo'etzet Gedolei HaTorah. So now this is very fascinating. I can understand you're going to ask a question, Gedolei Yisrael, we have a terrible problem today, Aguna, the self-inflicted Aguna. What do we do about men who refuse to give a get and they want $100,000? Today $100,000 is nothing, they want $500,000, $1,000,000, and otherwise they're not going to give a get. So I can understand, you have to consult with Rabbanim Gedolei Yisrael. We have to put our heads together. You can have shailas today of who's the parent. You understand, a different woman carries the child in her womb. Who is the semen from? Who are the eggs from? Oh, what you can have today. You can wind up, the New York Times had an article that they're three parents to the child. Very recently, very recently. All right, these are tremendous halachic problems. Tell me, would I consult with Gedolei Yisrael about how to go into war if we have to raid Damascus, Syria?
With the
rabbi? You follow? I mean, an interesting question. Look. Don't play games with me. In 57, you know the story. We heard in America, we were just flabbergasted. 57, 56, I should say. It was a 56. I was a sophomore in college already. 55, yeah, I was a sophomore. So I remember this. It was a Sunday. The news broke out that Friday night. In the Shtibel on Rechov Acharam. Do you know who Shtibel was there? The Belzer Rebbe. The Belzer Rebbe, Rabar Lerokach, who survived the Holocaust, he dafka went to Tel Aviv. It's an amazing thing, an amazing story. And he was the Tzadik Yisod Olam. Davi, he lost his wife and 11 children in the Holocaust. Could you fathom something like that? And he spent all his time, he barely ate. He was like skeletal, barely ate. Just davened, and Friday night in the shtibel, there's people still alive in their 80s, 90s today who will tell you they were eyewitnesses. When they reached Hapori Sukkot Shalom, Aleinu Bal Kol Amo Yisrael, V'al Yerushalayim, the Rebbe went into Hitla Havud, ecstasy. And he was in a different world. It was 7 o'clock at night, 6 o'clock, he signaled the gabbai to go ahead and finish davening, and he finished davening at 12 midnight. Could you imagine? And then he told the gabbai, Am Yisrael is b'tzara gedola, I'm fasting on Shabbat, bimotzi me with Kiddush. And the gabbai made Kiddush, and he was fasting. Sunday morning, the radio announced, you can hear it, it's recordings that are available, may even be on YouTube. It's Kol Yisrael Modia. That Friday night we went into Sinai, and the most critical battles were fought when the Rebbe was davening. When he finished davening, we were on the way to the Suez Canal. So you see, you're going to wonder, how did the Rebbe know? Okay? So you say Ruach HaKodesh, which, fine. I say, in addition, there is no doubt that some of the generals went to him for a bracha. You follow me? There's no doubt in my mind. Because Tzva Haganah Yisrael, then the generals, there wasn't one frum major general. But 90% of them, outside of Moshe Dayan, were raised in Meir Shearim. I can give you names. When I came in Aliyah, I went to the Gerer Rebbe, to the Shtibel, Erev Rosh Hashanah, and I was told, you'll see the sight, one army car after another driving up, major generals getting out, coming to the Rebbe for Rosh Hashanah. Unbelievable, the way they were raised. Gur, Mordechai Gur, how do you think he got the name Gur? He's a Gerer Chassid, the family, one after another. Today it's a different Israel. Today you have major generals with kippot. It's a different Israel today. But then these were Gornish to Gronish, what his name was, the Yom Kippur War general. Where was he raised? Deitz Chaim, Meir Shearim.
His name was Yanush.
Ganush, right? No, Yanush is someone else. This was with a gimel.
Yanush.
You can look it up. He was later blamed for what happened incorrectly. So Shmuel, his first name was Shmuel,
right,
with a gimel afterwards. Anyway, so what are you going to consult? You notice the way this is said, that they're going to work, but only Hora'at Gedolei Yisrael Ha'amitiyim. And here you come to a very delicate question. Am I going to go and ask the Gedolei Yisrael whether to demonstrate, not to demonstrate, whether to send Shluchim into Russia or not to send Shluchim into Russia? A very delicate question. Let me give you the mirror image. No? You've heard this story in 1,000 different ways. The doctors say, you must operate. The parents say, give us an hour, we're going to reach the Lubavitcher Rebbe in New York and ask him what to do. People here go to Bnei Brak. There are some tzaddikim who know medicine, who give you an answer. The Boston Rebbe, Levi Yitzchak Horowitz, the previous Boston Rebbe, the famous Boston Rebbe. He knew every medical doctor. He knew who to refer everyone to. He knew me because I have a brother, a medical doctor. So you see, there's a very delicate line here. How would you feel if you're the greatest expert in a certain type of medicine and you look at the x-rays and you make a decision and some Hasidic Rebbe in Bnei Brak is advising the parents what to do? You understand?
I feel very bad.
No, but say that it's a delicate question.
Well, come on, I assume that the people you're talking about are people knowledgeable.
Yeah, but say that. When you hear stories about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, it's right, you just said it, Ruach HaKodesh,
and people also had unbelievable knowledge.
Say that, very delicate. I know that when my father, mother, decisions had to be made, I never consulted with a Rav. I left the information the hospital knew was, any medical question, you call my brother. Any halachic question, you call me. We divided responsibility, but I didn't consult. But I'm not a Hasid, I'm a Litvak, I'm a little bit different, was raised differently. I saw Gedolei Yisrael, but up close, Litvashi Gedolim. Okay, but it's a very delicate question.
Wasn't the Chazon Ish sometimes involved?
The Chazon Ish was consulted many times, all right? Foyer, you know who I'm talking about? This is Hasidish guy in Bnei Brak, who has contact with all the doctors and all the Gedolei HaRabbanim, and he will tell you where to go, what to do, who to turn to. The Boston Rebbe knew exactly which doctor to push you to. You know, you have a problem, you want the expert. So it's a very delicate area. I want to show you where I suffered. And this is, I've mentioned this years ago, and Bididi HaViyuvda, and I suffer until today. And this happened to me. I didn't write it up with full detail in Washington because Torah is very precious to me, and I never want to embarrass someone, even though I think it was a tragedy. So I'll give you an idea where we come to a very difficult borderline, a very gray area. Here it is, plain and simple. Remember I told you by the mid-80s, it's not only Reb Menashe Klein who's involved. His tshuva here is indicative because of a guy named Rakefet and because he went to Maris Shera. And Agudat Yisrael got involved. And suddenly, Jews are waking up to what is happening in Russia. And there is no doubt that a Jew who has a heart of Torah is overwhelmed when he sees Yomo's aunt and uncle and Avraham's aunt and uncle want to observe Torah and they can't and they're frightened. A Jew will do everything to help. If you're a good Jew, and you all know I write about this in Washington, God privileged me to be involved with the Mossad for the last 10 years of communism. Malka and I sent over 200 people to keep the chain going to Russia. It was a very big process, not simple. And when people came back, I judged their religious tenacity. There's some people I sent, and I've told you this many times over the decades, some people I sent were shaking. What can we do? They would call me every Monday, Thursday. What can we do to help? I write about two women in Washington who are no longer white. I write about those two women. They're no longer alive. So no one can say to me, Rebbe, why didn't you write about me? You're alive. These women are not alive. Janet Levin learned Russian to help the Russian Olim here. What a tzaddiket. Rabbi Rubin's wife, Judy, her home became a center of activity. Anyone that had old furniture to give away, pots and pans to give away. What that lady did from 7 in the morning to 12 midnight. What a lady, what a lady. Zichron tzadeket livracha. So, you see, Haredim went to Russia, Agudat Yisrael, they came back shaking. Ibigarashed, shaking. I don't want to say Ibigarashed in English, but you get the feeling.
Overwhelmed.
Shaking. So now the Haredi world approached the Mossad and they want to do something. And I told you, Aryeh Kroll, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, the man who ran this division of the Mossad, later receives Pras Yisrael. At that time, you could never mention his name. You referred to him as the boss who I would meet with once a week, once in 10 days. It worked very well. No one knew where I was. Everyone thought I was in the army. I was in the army. I gave a lecture in the Matei Klali in Tel Aviv. And then I had, when I finished the lecture, the secretaries in the army, the Maskirut, they were our soldiers, they were all Sfardiyot. Their love of Torah is indescribable. Their respect for a Talmud Chacham is indescribable. A Dat HaMizrach has it. We Ashkenazim lost it, plain and simple. So they would bring me lunch and coffee and Kvod HaRav. Then I would disappear across the street, two blocks away. It's now in Sirona, in the park. There's a little pathway, Albert Mendler Street. That's where the Mossad branch was that dealt with Russian Jewry. In addition to what's underground, there's nothing left. They knocked it all down. It's not all underground. Underground is where they built the airplanes, where they put the planes together in 47, 48. But above the ground, they knocked down all their houses there. Albert Mendler Street, that's where I would go. There were three levels of security. I told you, they had one of the few computers in Israel. I can still see it was an entire wall, lights flashing, the name of every refusenik in Russia. Anyone trying to get out, you follow me, Dovi? Went into this computer, but they had to protect it. It was harder to get into there than to get into the army base. You had to go through three levels. In 1980, 1981, 82, 83, 84, 85. And so Aryeh Kroll, I meet with him, you know, once a week, once every 10 days, and the army covered. No one knows who I am in the army, which is true. I gave a lecture. I did what I had to do. I was in the army. This was the Miluim I did. It was called Miluim Mefutzalim. You had to sign a special form agreeing to break up your Miluim and not to do it day to day, but over the year to do 35 days. So, Aryeh says, tells me the whole story, and he was approached by Rafal Halperin, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. These were important people, and he says, we met here, you know, people dealing with Russian Jewry, and you're our man. We're appointing you to be our liaison with the Haredi world. So now I'm meeting with Rafal Halperin, and we're having, he takes me out to his restaurants. He was not a poor man, a multi-billionaire, millionaire. Halperin, optical, glasses, it's all, that's his family. He established it. A former wrestler, a big Talmud Chacham, very interesting individual. So now it's getting serious. They want to hold a demonstration in Bnei Brak. Now, could you imagine what it means, a demonstration in Bnei Brak? This is not the literature world. If Aaron Rakefit will say, I'm holding a demonstration against cars, since cars were invented, 30 million plus people have been killed by cars, let's get rid of cars. All right, you want to get rid of computers? I say get rid of cars first. Fine. So I say I'm holding a demonstration. 10 people come. I have thousands of Talmidim. No, the Rebbe, big deal, he's all the virus. Good Mishigar there. No one's coming. When the Vishnitzer Rebbe says, come out for a demonstration, 30,000 Hasidim are right there. The Belzer Rebbe, the Gera Rebbe, you got 250,000 people without lifting a phone. So Rabbi Teitz, Zeich Zichrono Levracha, and I loved Rabbi Teitz. He was my mentor in the rabbinate. We were bosom buddies. His daughter married my chavruta, Jerry Blau, Rabbi Yosef Blau. Rabbi Teitz came in from America to tell them not to demonstrate. And Das Teira, and that it just aggravates the Russians. And you see, That may have been true in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, perhaps the 50s. 60s, 70s, the winds started to shift. By the 80s, it was obvious that the demonstrations were being listened to in Moscow, in the Kremlin. And despite what Yomo is trying to say, the facts are otherwise.
Well, wait,
So watch. That's exactly my point. And you'll see now what I'm going to show you. Exactly my point. You see, a question like this can't be handled with a Masorah. There's a time for Shtatlanut, and there's a time where you act differently. Times change. It's fluid. It's flexible. You have to take into consideration exactly what's going on in the world at this moment. And I'll say, to the credit of the Mossad, I saw this with my own eyes. They had facsimile machines. It's before the modern world. First, then regular faxes come, then email today. You know that 24/7 info was coming in from all over the world about everything happening to Jews in Russia. Any tourist, a guy in London, in Paris, got out of Moscow, brings back a report, immediately it's sent on to the Mossad. In every embassy of the State of Israel, in every shagirut, in modern Hebrew, there's one person in charge. Anything on Russian Jewry, to Tel Aviv immediately. And they're constantly weighing what is going on, who's being arrested, why him, why not the other person, why this person is allowed to leave, why this person remains. They were experts dealing with every little nuance of information out of Russia. So I was very, very embarrassed, because by 1985, 86, the bigger the demonstration, the more impact it had on Russia. And as you know, when Gorbachev takes over and they have a demonstration, I think it was 250,000 Jews came out to Washington, I think it was 89. That was the end of communism vis-a-vis the Jews. Their entire attitude changed. And, you know, they saw the Western world is serious. Russia's in terrible problems, economically, militaristically. What happened in Chernobyl showed the world that it was one big Potemkin village. If you're familiar with the story of the Tsar coming to visit a village, and they had, the village looks like Anatevka, nothing has been done there. The Tsar sends money, the money is robbed, misused. So it's like Israel in the Six-Day War, do you know? And my grandsons tell me they still have it. They have endless paper tanks in the Israeli army. Fake tanks. From afar, it looks exactly like a tank. Well, Israel famous for it, what they pulled off with these fake tanks. Potemkin village, when the Tsar came, they put up cardboard houses, beautiful. And the minute the Tsar left, they're back to ashes again. So by the late 80s, Russia was one big Potemkin village, and Western money, Western help was number one on their agenda. And the Jews were a small price to pay for this help. And when Sharansky was suffering in jail, his jailer said to him, you're never going to get out. So women and children are demonstrating in America to free you. So what? The very fact that the jailers knew that shows you the impact that it was having. So Baruch Hashem, now, this question here that he asks, and the way he asks it, shows you a certain mentality. Das Torah, we're going to demonstrate, we're going to do, and it has to be only with the greatest Rabbanim and their approval. And I want to be very serious now. How do we handle a question like this? What do we do? I would say with medical issues, there's no doubt in my mind, as a Talmud of the Rav, we got to listen to the doctor. We can consult a Rav, a rabbi, ask for a bracha. We can consult a rabbi, a Rav, a Rosh Yeshiva. Do you know this medical doctor? Can we depend upon him? All right, fine. Doctors are always, they're always publications, New Year, what's it, New Yorker, or New York Magazine, whatever they call it, every year they list 100 of the top doctors in the New York area, and I'm proud to tell you, some of them listed are my own students. So, all right, but ultimately, it's like alternative medicine. You got to be a big fool, and I know someone who had cancer and wouldn't listen to the doctor. Alternative medicine, alternative diet. All right, she's 6 foot under, many decades already, in the prime of life. Got to listen to a medical doctor. If alternative medicine tells you to eat an avocado once a day, Mela, eat an avocado. But don't eat the avocado and not take the treatment, the medicine. My dear students, I want to show you another tshuva which deals with this very question. I don't know of any other tshuva that is totally devoted to this question and very, very fascinating, very sharp. You can see in this tshuva there's a bit of an anti-Haredi overtone. Okay, I want to thank Yomo for putting up 36,000 ruble so I can reveal the tshuva to you. My dear students, a year and a few months ago we had a terrible tragedy here, if you recall, the sukkahs, the murders that went on. And among the worst murders was a young couple of American origins, the Henkin couple. Remember, Harav Eitan Henkin and his wife. And Eitan Henkin already was a real Talmud Chacham and published wonderful scholarly publications, very bright future before him. For who einenu v'hi einena ki lakhu oto elokim. I'll say to the credit of Rabbi Lukstein that his shul, his contacts raised and $1 million were put aside for the children later to be able to go to college, and there should be no lack of money. I think it was 4 little orphans that were left. That's what I'm told. I'm saying $1 million. I hope I'm correct. I didn't see it black and white, but that's what I was told. Now, the name Henkin has to tell you something. There's a guy named Rakefet who says the only reason he can sit in front of a microphone and teach Torah is that he was zeicher to talk and learning with his Rebbe Muvhak, Rav Soloveitchik, Rebbe Moshe Feinstein, Rebbe Aaron Kotler, and Rebbe Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Rebbe Yosef Eliyahu Henkin was the posek of the United States before Rebbe Moshe Feinstein. He was a tzaddik yesod olam. You have no idea who we're talking about. Now, he wrote quite a few svarim, not as many as he should have. He was involved in Ezra's Torah and help and chesed. But if you go downstairs to the library, there are 2 full volumes called Kitvei Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Very fascinating material. A posek muvhak took on Rabbi Moshe Feinstein over civil marriage. Rabbi Henkin felt civil marriage absolutely needs a get, and when there's no get, it's mamzerut. Took on Rabbi Moshe. The Machloket shook the East Side, shook New York, ultimately shook the world. Every Beis Din in the world has to take sides on this Machloket because untveda are, either or. Either you don't need a get and the kid is not a mamza, or you need a get and the child is a mamza, with all the implications for hundreds of thousands of Balei Tshuva today. All right. This was Rav Henkin. By the way, Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik agreed with Rav Henkin, not with Rav Moshe, on this issue. Now, Rav Henkin had a few children, I happen to know them all. One of them became Hamilton Fisk, International Professor of Law at Columbia University. All his children were Frum. One of them married a Hungarian who got out in 56 with the revolution, and he was the caterer at YU. He ran the kitchen house. I remember them well. Ugh. And then he had another son who was a teacher in Brooklyn, La Briotte, maybe in Flatbush Yeshiva, Talma Torres, put together a living teaching in the afternoon schools that no longer exist, but were Reb Moshe has tshuvot about it. If you're allowed to teach in a conservative Talmud Torah, reform Talmud Torah, and as long as you can teach Torah, you're allowed, as long as they don't interfere with what you're teaching. So he had a son, Reb Yehuda Herzl Henkin, should look at me well, this is the father of the children who were killed. Reb Yehuda Herzl Henkin is, I believe, a Flatbush graduate. Anyone can correct me, check it out. Flatbush Yeshiva graduate, then he went to Columbia University, if I'm not mistaken. He never really studied in a Yeshiva Gavoha, but he studied with his grandfather. And Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin is a Gon, a Mamish a Gon, studied with his grandfather for many, many decades. And his wife, you all know, is Hannah Henkin. Hannah Henkin, the Stern College graduate, what's her institution called? Nishmat. You've all heard of Nishmat. Some of you have wives from the Kollel who study in Nishmat. This is the family, okay? Hannah and Yehuda Herzl Henkin. Yehuda Herzl Henkin, he should live and be well. He needs refuah shleima. He's not in the best of health today. And he's a very interesting figure. I always felt bad that somehow he didn't find his place. And I wish Chris Kollel were bigger and we could bring in a few more top personalities. He would have fit right into Chris Kollel. Very fascinating. He has published 4 volumes of responsa literature. And I can tell you, if you're going to deal with responsa literature, contemporary issues, you must deal with his volumes. It is called, for an obvious reason, Sheilatu Tshuvat B'nei Banim. What is he referring to? It's an allegory here. He's giving you a simile, a message. B'nei Banim. He's a grandson of Rab Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. All right? I am quoting from Sheilatu Tshuvat B'nei Banim, Chelek Sheni, Siman Nun Aleph.
What's the context of you bringing this here?
Why am I quoting it?
Yeah.
You'll see in 1 second. It's the same Shaila that Rav Menashe Klein got. Okay? This is from 1988 Hanukkah. It's right before the massive demonstration that's being planned for Washington, D.C. And he doesn't tell you who he's asking. He says, L'sho Alechad. An anonymous person asked me, or at least he makes the person anonymous, doesn't give the name Gideon, you follow? No name here. And he says, after I gave a shir that you were in the audience, you came over and asked me about demonstrating for Russian Jewry in general. Should we demonstrate? And specifically, should we go to Washington for the massive demonstration? And here he quotes, it's amazing, he hits the Gemara right on the head. It's like a hammer hitting the nail. You all know the Gemara, I trust, Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yutret, Omid Aleph. A similar Gemara in Ta'anit, Yutret, Omid Aleph. Well, what's the Gemara? And the Gemara talks about the Romans issued a decree. Jews cannot study Torah. Jews cannot observe Shabbat. Jews cannot do a Brit Milah. And they didn't know what to do. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Shammua and his friends went to ein Matronita achat, shekol gedolei Romi mitsuyin etzla. They went to a woman, Matronita. In Haifa, they have double buses, and they called them. I think they have to call them Matronita. What do they call them?
Metronit.
The minute I heard that, I thought Matronita, like it's famous. Okay. Now, in the tshuva, and he says, we can learn so much from this tshuva. Number one, you notice that when it comes to consult about something practical, you can go to a guy, a non-Jew. You can go to a woman. Remember, we're living at a time when we have magazines that don't publish pictures of women. It's very frightening to me. Pictures of God, what are we, sex predators? A picture of the Chafetz Chaim's wife we can't publish? I understand the picture, all right, I date myself. Chaim, Herbie will understand me. A picture of Marilyn Monroe, I can understand. We don't publish. You know who Marilyn Monroe is, Gedanks? Okay. Rita Hayworth, that was World War II. Oy vey. I can understand. But Ribbono Shel Olam, Jewish Observer, published pictures of women. Women live, walk the streets. We have to know how to relate to them. So he brings many sources to prove, first of all, Matronita means a woman. Number two, it means a non-Jewish woman. You can see all the sources he brings from Shas and Midrashic literature. And you go to consult. Why her? She was evidently the expert. She knew how to deal with the Romans. She was a gracious lady with a salon, and evidently Roman generals and Roman lawmakers met in her salon. So she knew how to deal with them. And she told them, this is the advice she gave them, come demonstrate at night and plead with them. Why do you treat the Jewish people any differently than any other people? In Rome, there were a conglomeration of nations. Why are we being punished? Why do you have these terrible gezeirot against us? And she tells them, dafka, to demonstrate at night. And he analyzes every word of advice she gave them. What does it mean to demonstrate at night? Two different reasons. He quotes Rishonim. One reason, hold a demonstration when you get the biggest crowd. At night, people are not working. Okay? Why do we make a wedding at night? My wife is all upset. The Brit is early tomorrow morning. We have to be in this moshav near Rehovot at 8:30. All right, for me it's the middle of the day, 8:30. But Nashim Ambifnei Atzmam Heim, for my wife, 8:30. Wow. So my grandson apologized. He said, people have to go to work. You follow? So a Brit has to be by day, Vayashkem Avraham. But a wedding's at night. I have a wedding this Thursday night. Wedding's at night. Demonstrate when you get the biggest crowd. You know when the demonstration was held in Washington? Sunday. Why Sunday? People are not working. The biggest crowd. So that's one interpretation. The other one is very fascinating. And the Rav spoke about this many times, quoting from the Midrashim, quoting from the Kabbalistic literature. Night is fearful. Man's emotions are exposed. The day, it's light, you're active, you're alert. Night, quiet, alone, you look out the window. I don't like to drive at night. Driving by day is so much easier, even with the ways. Right or wrong? Demonstrate at a time where the emotion will hit home. It's good advice. When you get up at a wedding and everyone is half drunk and dancing and they ask a rabbi to speak, Ich liv tich taya in dread. Believe me, when they ask me to speak at a wedding, when people are dancing on the tables, you follow me, Avi? I'm not happy to speak then. All right, a Brit Mila. Could be it's a better time to speak. People are just saw the mole do a cut, and you can elaborate. Pick a time when your message will be heard. Kumi roni belaila barosh kutsat. No, eicha, right or wrong. And the Rambam, look into the Rambam, Hilchot Talmud Torah. Ain't a dumb koner at rov chachmato ela belaila, at night, when the world is quiet, when you can think, when you can pause, when you can ponder. I just spoke with Natan about Velushin. In Velushin, people were learning 24/7. There was never a time when there wasn't learning in the Beis Medrash. You signed up, you either took the 7 to 12 midnight shift or the 12 midnight shift to 5 a.m. But there were never, I told Natan, after Yom Kippur, no, didn't Siv went into the Beit Medrash and learned. After Yom Kippur, we're all diving for a drink, for a piece of cake to restore ourselves. That Siv went into the Beit Medrash. He didn't go to break his fast until the first students came back from eating. So, nighttime. Do it when the message will be heard. And then you have to do a message that makes sense. What do they tell the Romans? Why must we suffer? Why are we any different? We're all citizens. We have to tell the Russians. We're part of an ancient people. We want repatriation to our homeland, to Israel. Russian law allows for repatriation. Right or wrong, we'll see it when we get back to Reb Menashe Klein. I can tell you that my instructions from the Mossad were, and I always pass this on to the people I sent, you never criticize communism. We are not fighting communism. We are asking for repatriation, which communism allows according to their laws. And when I would get up to speak in Russia, oh, you would hear me praise the communist system. Nothing like the metro in Moscow. Have you ever been on the metro? It makes the New York subway look like an ancient, half-hearted attempt to do something for its humble, stupid citizens. The metro? Wow, the art? The trains, they had signs already in the 80s telling you, next train, 3 minutes.
What about Stalin?
Please, I'm praising them. So the KGB,
what about Stalin?
Stalin, a tremendous murderer, killed more people than Hitler. What do you want out of Stalin? But forget about the doctors and lawyers. He killed his own people. He starved them. The Ukraine, what Stalin did. The Jews didn't suffer as much under him as the indigenous Russians.
So when only, you were talking, you weren't telling the truth.
Of course, I wanted the KGB agent sitting there to say, oh, this guest from America, he understands us. Oh, this is wonderful. Then you make your request, repatriation. What do you think, the Mossad was stupid? They're sending, over the years, thousands of so-called tourists into Russia to recreate Jewish feeling. You don't want to fight communism. No, we want the Jew to be able to express himself, an ancient people. why shouldn't he be allowed self-determination? And this was the message. But he says, we learned this from a Roman woman. You got to see what Rav Henkin, Yehuda Herzl Henkin, where I put the first sheet, what Yehuda Herzl Henkin, how he, we learned from a Roman. Now, here, how do we act? Hishtadlut. What was Hishtadlut? Hishtadlut was the Jewish way of dealing with the authorities throughout the millennium. You try to buy them off, the stories are legendary. The Tsar would send his people to investigate the schools, the Chadorim. Are they teaching the kids Russian? Are they teaching the kids math? These people would come, make a lechayim, give them a little gift, pass some silver coins into their hands, talk with them, reason with them, agree, disagree, meet them halfway. Hishtadlut, conferences. But tell me, demonstrations? When did Jews do demonstrations? Demonstrations? You know that the Satmar Rav and Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, in a famous article he published, said exactly the same thing, that our demonstrations against Hitler brought about the Holocaust. Are you familiar with that or not? Contributed to bringing about the Holocaust?
Which demonstrations?
The late 30s, my parents participated, Madison Square Garden. 25,000 people in and 100,000 outside. My parents couldn't even get in. The crowd was so big.
And they wanted to boycott.
It contributed.
But they said it was counterproductive.
Yeah, right, exactly. That Hitler, and what, you're not familiar with the Silver Era? In the Silver Era, I give you all the facts. Agudat Yisrael was opposed. That's one of the reasons the Rav later leaves Agudat and becomes a Mizrachiite. He saw which system went out. So you see, should we use Hishtadlut? Should we go and continue tradition? Or do we demonstrate? Do we yell? Do we shout? Do we boycott? So here he's very sharp. This is not an issue for Rabbanim to decide. This you have to go to the experts. And you have to check with the people in the field. In my case, I knew that the experts were the Mossad.
Well, what about in the case of the Rebbe, and it was both?
Excuse me? You're talking about the Lubavitcher Rebbe.
Yeah, he had his own network of operatives that oftentimes were ahead of the Mossad.
Absolutely.
And he was categorically against it throughout. He said it. He had to work with quiet diplomacy and that the demonstrations...
Not at the end. Not by the mid-80s. You notice Lubavitch is much quieter because there's a shifting element atmosphere in Russia. And this is what he says, that we have to constantly investigate what is happening, what will be productive, what will be connected, what will be counterproductive. And he says, Lehitya'etz b'mumchim v'afilu b'mumchim nachrim k'moshe natlu etza min ha-matrinita. And he says, in my opinion, even the greatest Gedolei Yisrael have to learn from the Gemara that Rabbi Yehuda ben Shammua b'chavayrav went to a non-Jewish woman to get advice. And here he's very, very powerful. This person asking him the question says to him that people are claiming in America that Reb Moshe Feinstein was against demonstrating.
Agud and Harabbanim came out against it. And other people are quoting Hagon Reb Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik Shlita, Mori Rebbe, obviously. And he was in favor of the demonstration. And Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin says, I checked it out. And Reb Moshe Feinstein, yes, was originally opposed to demonstrations. But by the 1980s, he said, I'm no longer opposed. He said, Rav Soloveitchik, it is well known, told his Talmidim, this is not a question for Rabbanim to decide, it is a question for the experts in the field to decide. Consult with them, and don't consult with me. And here he goes into a very important little discourse. Times change, circumstances change, and he has a footnote here, which I know all too well. There are other sources that talk about it. He says, let me give you an example from my grandfather, Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Before 1948, he was opposed to having a Jewish state because he said, if we declare a Jewish state, the Arabs will attack us and much Jewish blood will be shed. After 48, he said, times have changed, the circumstances have changed, and it's exactly the opposite. If we don't support the Jewish state, more Jewish blood will be shed. The Arabs will think they have a chance to wipe out the Jews. And therefore, he says, the real Gedol Yisrael, this is a very sharp sentence, Ube'emet ha-gedolim yodim lishanot et daitam, avol haktanim ein lahem dat, ve'enu yodim lishanot. V'tolim atzman bedat gedolim bizman uve'makam shah halalu lo dibru. And in simple translation, great Gedolei Yisrael know how to change their opinions. But little people who think they're Gedolei Yisrael, they are foolish and they remain static even though the chimes have changed. And here you're really, this is the heart of the whole question of Das Torah and who can have an opinion and who can give advice. And I can tell you what these ears heard and these eyes saw. The State of Israel, I spoke about this when the book launch of my new book, Rakaf Aharon Chelek Gimel. I spoke about this, I alluded to it. If you go through Rakaf Aharon Chelek Gimel, it's a world of material on two topics, a classic Aguna and Mamzeret. Now, the State of Israel, my very early years here, the State of Israel shook over the Langer brother and sister. Some of the people who I meet over the generations tell me the greatest shirm I ever gave them, the kol of my shirm on the Langers. All right, there were those shirm were yet given in 24 Ababanel. I can still remember where I was giving them. And they were a very interesting shayurim. We dealt with a tremendous problem. A brother and sister, live, tangible. Their pictures were in the press. Safek Mamzeret, they're both in the army. They both want to marry, and they refuse to go to Cyprus. They want to marry Al Pi Halacha. Case came up, went through the rabbinate, reached Rabbi Gorin. I can't go into all the details. It was a bitter, bitter state of events. Moshe Dayan, who then was a god, it's before 73. Could you imagine Moshe Dayan in the army today? How many jail terms he would get for his behavior? Just think what I'm saying.
Which
behavior? His
liaisons with the opposite sex, let it rest at that. His stealing is the least of it compared.
Well, stealing is a more serious offense.
Look, it's more serious. God have mercy. It's not. It's just as bad or worse. We're talking about women.
We're talking about vis-a-vis Hashem or vis-a-vis God.
Every last woman was subject to him. I know. Okay. I can tell you stories, not for the microphone and not from public.
So you're not just talking about affairs.
No, what are you talking about? On Rehov Chernichovsky, I'll show you a building where in 68 this high school kid came home and found his mother with. He committed suicide 1 week later. I can show you the building, okay? Everyone knew, Mrs. Everyone knew. But that's a small matter. What he did in the army. Wow. Read. But that's Dayan. Then he was an Elil, a god. So Dayan said at a cabinet meeting, Minister of Defense, if this boy and girl are not allowed to marry, I will introduce civil marriage here. So Rav Gurin went to work and he uncovered, he uncovered the files in the city of Tel Aviv that at the time of her first marriage, the social workers considered her husband a Polish Roman Catholic. And it was Zil Kriberafu, axiomatic. And that will explain when she got divorced and the other rabbi remarried her, a big Talmud Chacham, he had no doubt she didn't need a get. She was married to a guy the first time. So Rav Gurin put his case together, and what happened here was unbelievable. The machloket, the political involvement, it became a cause celebre way beyond the question of Mamzeret. Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin, in America, he was blind already, he was an old man. You should know a woman married him, a young woman in her 30s, Bala Tshuva. She said, I want the schut. He was widowed, and he needed help, and like he needed constant help around the clock. She said, I want to take care of him 24/7 to have the schut before the Ribbono Shel Olam. And she married him and took care of him till the day he died. So they recorded him talking, and there's Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin, and he says in Yiddish, I heard the recording, it might be available online. I don't understand why they're coming down on Rav Gurin. He's absolutely right. What he found, the sfeika he put together, is enough lahatir the mamzer al pi halacha. And I'll never forget.
Were those children from the Roman Catholic man?
No, from the second. If they'd be from the Roman Catholic, it wouldn't be a shaila. But it was from the second where there was no get in between. And remember, the man claimed that her father converted him in an ad hoc conversion. And at the Shloshim for Rav Henkin in Geula, it was in the old, I believe, the old Chevron Yeshiva on Rehov HaYeshiva. If I'm not mistaken, that's where I recall I went. I was there, it was a big crowd. And Rav Henkin mentioned his grandfather, not only Paskin, but didn't let any outside political influence frighten him. Praised his grandfather. And he mentioned this psak. And I saw with my own eyes some of the students, Kanoim, wanted to get up and throw Rav Henkin Jr. off the podium.
Where but was this?
In Geula. It may have been in the old Chevron Yeshiva, but in Geula. It was in a big yeshiva, a big audience was there.
But how is he speaking there? Isn't he...
No, because they were Mechabedim, he's a grandson.
Okay.
It's the early 70s. It wasn't yet Nishmat.
Right.
He was part of the rabbinic world. And I saw they looked at the Rashi Yeshiva, who's told them not to do anything, not to say anything, and the evening continued without a disgrace. But this is Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin, and this is his grandson, Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin. And here in this tshuva, you see the difference between, I'll use a popular word, the Haredi approach that surfaces in Rabbi Menashe Klein, where
he uses the word Tachat Gedoli Yisrael Muvhakim, and here where he quotes Reb Meisher and quotes the Rav and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, this person, and yes, Rav Yaakov said, in the past I opposed demonstrations, but that was Russia of years ago. But I hear things are changing today, and demonstrations help, and I will not usher any demonstration. And he ends off the tshuva, Vashreichem shatem oskin b'mitzvah zu, v'techazena yedei kol ha-messayamim, v'techazakna yedei kol ha-messayamim. And he says, I'm very pleased that you're involved with this, and God should give strength. You should all be able to do it in dignity, b'yetta se'et u'b'yetta oz. And it's a moment in time. This tshuva is a moment in time. Okay. Now, in order to answer the question that Rav Menashe Klein received, should you stop all your other activities? Could you imagine Yomo's a balabas, and he's working, he's a computer programmer and all that goes with it, and he has his shiur every morning between 7 to 8. And Yomo decides he's going to knock out the shiur and do what he can for Russian Jewry. It's a serious question. What is the status of these people? Are these Shvuyim, Jews in captivity? What is their status? Are they Anusim? Very interesting question. Anusim, Spain, Portugal, Jews on the inside, Goyim on the outside, to save their lives. In the house they kept kosher, lit candles, and outside they went to church on Sunday, kissed the cross, ate chazer in public if they had to. What are these Jews in Russia? And here he digresses, and I'm going to give you an unbelievable source and explain something. We'll have to end off the class with this. These Jews in Russia, there's no question. They're captured. They have no choice. Perhaps they're anusim. They can't observe Yiddishkeit. If they observe Yiddishkeit, they'll be severely punished. Could you imagine? You're not going to go to work on Shabbos in Russia. They work 6 days a week. You don't go to work, you can wind up in Siberia. You don't know what Chabotnikim went through. Read the memoir literature, what shtick they had to pull off not to work on Shabbos. And the memoir literature is unbelievable. But it's amazing, at times you wound up before this big commissar, this big communist with so much power, they pulled down the curtains, closed the door, swore you to secrecy, and asked you to bring them 30 kilo of matzah. It's amazing. And time and again, this big communist official turns out to be a Jew who comes from Gedolei Yisrael, publicly against religion, atheist, this, that, party line, and privately their heart broke when they saw a Jew struggling to keep Shabbos and made arrangements, all right, we'll give you this type of work where you do it in your house, you bring in the quota when it's finished. Don't have to show up Shabbos. Kid would go to school and everyone would laugh at him, and Shabbos, the teacher looked the other way. She was Jewish. I mean, it's amazing, but he makes the point. They can't be Shomer Shabbos. They know nothing as well. They've had no teachers. They had some folk understanding of Yiddishkeit. And by the way, not eating bread on Pesach was very, very big in Russia. It could very well be that the matzah they baked was basically chametz. It was regular flour, flour they got from the government. But never say a word. Let them think it's matzah. We can't go back in time and change what was. Later, we become wiser, and they know already about that matzah has to be washed, the flour can't be mixed with water, etc., etc. And then he alludes to something that if you just go through the tshuva superficially, you will not know what he is talking about. Natan thinks that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the 6th and 7th, did it all out of Eastern Parkway. Yes and no. Here you come to a woman who I hope, Dovi, you will go into making movies on a level, with a degree, with ability, and you will make a movie about this woman. It can be a documentary, it can be a Hollywood movie. Every Jew and every decent person in the world will want to see it. My dear students, there was a lady who was known as the Mumma Sarah. The word Mumma is a title of great honor in Yiddish. My grandfather, my Zayda, who didn't fear many people, he worked for Pechter's Bakery, he was a baker, Shemesh Shabbos. He spoke Yiddish, didn't speak anything else, although he lived in America from 1900 to 1959, I believe. 1959 or 58, could be 58. 58 years, didn't speak English, just Yiddish. When you mentioned Mumma Sarah to him, at Kitzitit, he shook. Who is Mumma Sarah in our family? If you read Washington, I tell you. I'm named for her husband. She was my great-great aunt. She was the religious figure in the family. Everyone stood in awe of her. Do you know the dentist Josh Daniel from Efrat? Anyone recognize the name? He's my cousin. Mumma Sarah was his great-great-grandmother. What a lady. My grandfather stood in awe. Mumma. We're talking here about a different Mumma. Mumma Sarah Katzenellenbogen, 1891 to 1952. You know how Chabad resuscitated itself? It wasn't just 770 Eastern Parkway. But what did we tell you about a moment ago? According to the Russian Constitution, a Jew is entitled to be repatriated. The Russians recognized that. But not repatriated to Israel. A Jew who came from Poland and saved his life by running into Russia in World War II, and many wound up in Siberia, many wound up in the warmer countries, the Georgia, other Tashkent. If these Jews came from Poland right after World War II, Stalin allowed repatriation. I'll give you more details on Mumma Sarah next time. She became the leading figure in Russia, risking her life, but she didn't care. Her husband was already killed by Stalin, Chabadnik, Tzadikim. She became the leading figure in forging documents, passports, dates of birth, place of birth, because of Mumasara, thousands of Jews and the heart of Chabad got out of Russia right after World War II. They wound up in every country, Israel, England, Australia, Canada, and above all, the United States. When the Rebbe began, the sixth Rebbe in Crown Heights, weisen as America's nicht anders für die alte Heim, that America's no different than the old home, it was not just Americans. There was the remnant that survived, which was now acclimating to the free world. And some of the most famous names in Chabad you will find among the people that from Asera got out, including five of her six own children. If I'm not mistaken, if you recall a year and some months ago, a Chabad Rav visiting his children was killed walking to shul in North Miami Beach. Recall? Remember? They finally arrested the murderer. His name was Rabbi Raskin. If I'm not mistaken, he's a great-grandson of Sarah Katzenbelenbogen. That's the family. But I'll give you more details about her with a fabulous source next time we meet. So, we're right here in the middle of Rav Menashe Klein. Fascinating tshuva. Are you allowed to knock off time? Is Yosef Mordechai Hachman, American born and bred, graduate of Talmudic Academy, Yeshiva College, and all that goes with it, member of Tzirei Agudat Yisrael, is he allowed to knock off time, stop the Seder, stop learning, give more time to helping Russian Jews? That's the exact question that Rav Menashe Klein has. But what we did today is also very interesting. We did a sideshow of a similar tshuva, similar question. Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin, a tshuva written just 2 or 3 years afterwards. Compare the two. Think about it. Two worlds being revealed before your life. And Steve, this takes me back to graduate school. I had a professor, Jacob Agus. Dr. Agus, the legendary, though he had fabulous teachers. I have to pity a guy like Avi Schwartz, who the heck knows what type of teachers he's been through. I had teachers, capital T. I'm a poor, the poorest example. What can I tell you? But all right, we try our best. But you have to remember, I have one thing going for me. The Rebbe is sitting right over there. I will never say anything to embarrass my Rebbe. That's going for me. So Dr. Regis used to say, we can recreate all of Jewish history. And, you know, we were smart kids. We say, Dr. Regis, professor, how do you know what went on 500 years ago? See, you're guessing. How do you know? We have responsa literature. From responsa literature, we can draw an accurate picture of how the Jews lived. And I have to tell you, the older I get, the more I realize he was 100% right. Okay. I apologize, but Oseg B'mitzvah, Patim in a mitzvah tomorrow morning. I have a Brit, so I'm not able to teach. It's mamish, a conflict. Exactly when I should be teaching is when the Brit is, but to make it even worse, the Brit is in Yad Rehovot, so I can't exactly get here. But next week, B'ezrat Hashem, we go back to normal and we pick up
with the Sunday and Monday class. I wanted to say something to Alex that what I'm going to do in the Monday class, I want him to do a doctorate on it. Tell that he'll understand. Okay, now just a few freebies. Here's an interesting article by a YU graduate. It's Rabbi Benjamin Hecht of Toronto on Israel, balancing our national responsibilities with universal. He's a very deep thinker, Rabbi Hecht, and you might enjoy that. Here's an article, anyone who's a Litvak, very fascinating. They're asking Sheilat from Reb Chaim Kanievsky about Shidduchim. And it's very fascinating to see the questions and to see the answers that Reb Chaim gives. Some of them are really halacha lemaisa that I've had to deal with. For instance, there's a 23-year-old girl and a 21-year-old girl, and the boy Dafka wants to marry the 21-year-old. Yeah. Rachel Valeya. Do you allow the younger daughter to get married before the older daughter? Very, very interesting. Here is material on Rab Melech Zweibel, and very, very fascinating material what Chabad is capable of creating. And Alex, I just told the class what I'm doing in the Monday class. Rav Yitzchak Kutna, I want you to do a doctorate. And I'll explain when I do the class what I want you to work on. And I'll be giving you a framework for you to take further. Okay? With source, no, I'm very serious, because you have an MA in Jewish philosophy. No one but no one has done an analysis of the Pachad Yitzchak from a universal philosophic point of view.
Yes, well, spoke to Dr. Elman.
Right.
But he has, I think he has one article.
No, Beseda, I'll show you some articles.
I studied with a Talmid of his, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Farber, who teaches Chappelle. I studied with him. I'm not that knowledgeable in Pachad Yitzchak, but I have some
background. Okay, now you'll see what I want. What I'm opening for you, gentlemen. Who do we have about Tfilah here? Who do we have? Avi, Yira Sidurim, for who Rachum?
Till we meet again.
Till we meet again. Health and happiness. Das Vidanya.